must hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, ting, tingling too. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you.
All right, it's Dave Plyer and for Steve Cochran this morning. Chances are you might have a classic Johnny Mathis Christmas record in your collection. For over 60 years, Johnny has entertained millions and has sold more than 360 million records nationwide, which ranks third among 20th century artists, only behind Elvis Presley and Frank Sinatra. Johnny's been nominated for an Academy Award, made well over 300 television appearances, has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and boasts a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award. His Merry Christmas album from 1968 has sold over 6 million records, which is one of the top Christmas albums of all time. And I don't know about you, but if I don't hear Johnny singing Winter Wonderland or Sleigh Ride, it simply isn't Christmas. And this Grammy Award-winning legend joins us this morning. Merry Christmas, Johnny.
Thank you so much. What a great introduction. Thank
Absolutely. Oh, man. And that was just really the tip of the iceberg. I mean, you are an amazing guy, and I am thrilled you are joining us. And as I said to you, it's just not Christmas without hearing your iconic voice.
That's a wonderful, wonderful feeling that I have at Christmas time, because I come from a large family. There are seven kids. My mom and my dad were domestic workers, so we didn't have very much money. But at Christmas time, my mom and my dad were just absolutely the most inventive people I've ever met in my life. And of course, I was all the time, I was going to school and singing in choirs and things of that nature. So when I got a chance, after I had a couple of hit records for Columbia Records, to make whatever kind of music I wanted to, the first thing I thought about was making some Christmas songs for my mom and my dad. And
that's awesome.
Over the years, to have the success that I've had with this Christmas music is just a wonderful. It makes my mom and my dad never leave me, because it's such a wonderful, wonderful thing that has happened. Because when I hear this music, of course, I think about them all the time.
Well, and what's funny, really, when you listen to your album, your first album, Christmas album from 58, and you look at your recent one that you released last year, you sound the same. You sound exactly the same. That is amazing.
I've been lucky, you know. I haven't had any problems vocally. The only problems I had, you know, is just getting old. I've had a couple of hip replacements. I had a back surgery. I think a lot of that had to do with my high jumping and hurdling when I was in college.
That could be,
But the voice has held up pretty well. I had a cold once in a while, but I even timed my colds. I don't get a cold when I'm supposed to sing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Good timing for you. Well, I want to first establish how you got into music. You know, you were mentioning your family. You were born in Gilmer, Texas. Big family you grew up in.
Yeah, my mom and my dad were very special people. They're in my thoughts and in my daily routine all the time. I was born in Gilmer, Texas. My mom and my dad moved the family very early on. I think I was about 4 years old when I moved to San Francisco. And my dad was a very good singer, and he played the piano a little bit by ear. He didn't wasn't trained musically, but the minute I hear myself sing, I sound exactly like my dad. My dad was a very good singer, and he was the reason that I sing to this day. Very early on, he thought that because I was always sitting by his knee and he was playing the piano and singing, and he said, son, let's find a teacher for you. And that sort of started the whole the scenario with my career. Daddy found a vocal teacher for me when I was 12, and we worked together. My voice teacher, Connie Cox.
Connie Cox, yeah.
Wonderful lady who taught me free of charge, and I did a lot of work around her house to sort of pay for my lessons. And we worked for about 7 years, and then at the age of 19, I got my first big break for Columbia Records.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you remember the first song your father taught you? Because I know you learned all of his songs hearing him around the house and so forth. Do you remember the first song he taught you?
Molly and me, and baby makes three. We're happy in my blue heaven.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
Dad sang that, and he had a wonderful menage of likes as far as his music was concerned. He loved Bing Crosby. He thought that that he was sort of a span of generations as far as his singing was concerned. But he also liked rhythm and blues and a lot of jazz. So that's the way I grew up, is listening to all this this musical element. And I kind of have, over the years, gone through a lot of it myself.
Now, you had a choice when you were in high school. You were very, very athletic at the time. You were trained even to compete in the Olympics. You know, you're a high jumper and so forth, as you mentioned, with the back surgery. And but, you know, you chose music instead. I mean, you definitely saw that that's something that was in your future, more than the sports.
Well, my athletic career was kind of buoyed by the fact that I went to school at the same time with Bill Russell, the great basketball player. And he and I became buddies, and I had a lot of success in my high jumping. I even broke a couple of Bill Russell's records, high jump records. And during the week that I was to go to the Olympic trials at Berkeley, California, I got my first opportunity to go make my first recording. Prior to that, I had had a lot of opportunities to go on the road with different bands and what have you, but my dad wouldn't hear of it. He thought I should stay in school and wait until something a little bit more realistic came along. And so when the record contract happened, he said, well, you know, I think this might be your best choice.
But at such a young age, I mean, you were playing in 1954, you were playing the famous Black Hawk. That is cool in and of itself. Tell me a little bit about that experience.
Well, you know, I lived in San Francisco, and I went to all the jazz clubs. I couldn't go during the working hours because they served liquor, and I was underage.
Sure.
But I went on the weekends, and I used to sit and listen to people like Miles Davis, Dizzy Gillespie, Earl Garner, singers like Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan. All of these people came through and played this little jazz club called the Black Hawk. And the owners of the club got accustomed to seeing me on Saturday afternoons when I would go in and listen to them rehearse. And of course, they put me in the corner and didn't bother with me. But I got a chance to meet all of these extraordinary people at a very early age. And then, of course, when I started to sing, I got to meet them in a different way. And I was friends, you know, with people like Dizzy Gillespie and Miles Davis, and everybody kept asking me, how on earth do you know these people? I said,
that's pretty cool. Oh, my God.
It was cool. Yeah, it was the coolest thing in the world.
We are talking to the voice of Christmas, the legendary Johnny Mathis, and there's more with Johnny after a look at your morning traffic.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight, we're happy tonight, walking in the winter wonderland.
Good morning once again, it's Dave Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to music legend Johnny Mathis. So you've been with the same record label almost all of your professional life, which in this day and age is unheard of.
I think the thing that amazes me mostly about my association with Columbia Records, their hierarchy, you know, the presidents and the people in charge of all the machinations of the record company have changed. I mean, they were changing, you know, presidents from, you know, 2 years since, 3 years since, 4 years. And they're all different people. And fortunately, I, you know, have stayed in the forefront of most of the people who are responsible for the talent. And it's kind of amazing, but every year since I've been with Columbia Records, I've had some releases. I think I'd be afraid to try to remember how many, and all of the single records that I've recorded, and
yeah.
all the albums and what have you.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the greatest asset that I had growing up were the people that I met in the studio and who agreed to work with me. And they are as responsible for my success as my voice is.
You're such a humble, you're so humble to say that, and that's wonderful that you look at that as a team. But you sold 350 million records, mostly under Columbia. You know, so you can't not love that.
Well, it's an amazing career I've had, and I kind of still feel awed by it all. But I'm still kind of eager to do things vocally. Over the years, I've met some extraordinarily gifted people. When I was very young, my voice teacher used to play me these recordings by these great opera singers and what have you. And of course, I tried a little bit of that. And I'd get to the most difficult part of the aria, and I'd have to stop because I couldn't sing the rest of it. But I learned a lot of half of arias when I was a kid, studying voice. So over the years, I've gotten an opportunity to meet some of these extraordinarily gifted people. The ones that come to mind are Leontine Price and Beverly Sills, who were two of my favorite singers.
Johnny, the record Merry Christmas, one of the best-selling Christmas albums of all time, was your seventh studio album, but it was your first Christmas album. And you were mentioning you did it for your parents.
Yeah, Mom and Dad were, two of my favorite people in the world. They were the most wonderful, extraordinary people, raising seven children on domestic wages that they earned. To this day, I marvel at what they did. But Christmas was always kind of special in the house, and they made it really special, even though they were, had no money.
You don't have to have money to make the holidays special, though.
Yeah,
right?
And I got caught up in Christmas mostly because of the music, because I sang in a lot of choirs, and I used to sing in the choirs in school, and we would go to the different department stores, and they'd put us way up high someplace, and we'd sing for half an hour. And then we'd go and wander around the store, and then we'd go back and sing for another half hour. We'd sing Christmas carols. And that's the thing that sort of I remember most. And of course, when I got an opportunity to record more or less whatever I wanted to at Columbia, the first thing I really wanted to do was make some Christmas music and dedicate it to my mom and dad.
You think about them when you hear those songs. You do.
Absolutely. They never leave me. I have their pictures all over the place. And, of course, I have three of my brothers and sisters are still around, and we get together all the time. We're very close. And I've been able to do a lot of things and especially around Christmas time, it means a lot to a lot of people. And I love being able to help people out around Christmas time.
Well, all of Johnny's Christmas albums and his latest, Johnny Mathis Sings the Great New American Songbook, are available at Amazon.com. And for more on Johnny, you can visit JohnnyMathis.com. All right, tomorrow's Christmas Day. Enjoy this beautiful time of year. And thanks so much for spending some time with us here in Chicago this morning, Johnny.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be Christmas. I love it.
It is. Merry Christmas, Johnny.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Mr. Christmas, the legendary Johnny Mathis. Can't get better than that. Much more ahead on 720 WGN.